It's Tuesday. Hi, I'm Jimmy Selesky, the third buffer brother. You are watching live from the studio, The Daily Edition. I say I'm the third buffer brother because there was Bruce Buffer, the announcer brothers, right? There was Bruce Buffer. He did the "Let's get ready to rumble." And then you have the other buffer. I can't remember the other buffer. Is it Mark Buffer? Michael Buffer? Michael Buffer. And Michael Buffer does, "It's time." And I get in repeated debates with my brother, the Selesky brothers, far less known than the Buffer brothers. And I say, dude, "It's time" is nowhere close to as good of a tagline as "Let's get ready to rumble." He's like, "Nah, dude, it's the way he says it, dude. It's the way he says it. It just gets you pumped up." It's like, dude, he literally just, like, Bruce Buffer paved the way of somehow making a career out of saying three words in a microphone before other people do something awesome. He'd be like, "Fighting out of the red corner, he has a mixed martial arts record of 16-2 with 3 knockouts." And then you just say your tagline. And you're like the guy. You're in video games and everything like that. And then Bruce Buffer's out of there. Michael Buffer's like, "I think I'll do the same thing. But I can't take 'Let's Get Ready to Rumble,' but I'll still take The Voice. So let me just come up with a different tagline. What should I do? How about 'It's time'?" You can tell the quality of a tagline based off of, does it sound cool when you say it regular? And this is a good method to incorporate into your judgment of all things, really. A good way to know if a song is good, if you're writing a song, is it good acoustic? Sure, your song sounds cool with all the electric synths and electric guitars and drums and vocal parts and everything like that, but if you can strip that song down and play it on an acoustic guitar, singer-songwriter style, James Taylor style, Jim Croce style, Bob Dylan style, then it's a good song. Likewise for taglines. "It's time" is not a good tagline. "Hey, it's time. It's time. It's time." That's not cool. You literally have to say it ridiculously for it to even come close to sounding cool. "Let's get ready to rumble"? There's no way I couldn't say that it wouldn't sound awesome. "Let's get ready to rumble! Hi, party of 'Let's Get Ready to Rumble' for two?" There's no way you can say it. That's not awesome. And that concludes this completely irrelevant rant at the beginning of Twitter Tuesday. It's Tuesday. It's Tuesday. And for those of you familiar with the show, you know on Tuesday we like to sit back. We like to review what's going on online. It's not necessarily just Twitter. Twitter seems to be the most rife with trending videos and stories and things like that, but there's some good viral reels on Instagram. I hear there's stuff going on TikTok. I wouldn't know. I checked out after Instagram, folks. That's right. I officially retired from getting new social media. Now, I might eventually if another social media comes out, but only if something more popular than Instagram happens, where Instagram and Instagram becomes obsolete, Twitter becomes obsolete. Only then will I get a new social media platform. I don't need a BeReal. I don't need a TikTok. I'm good. You know how your parents, like, they're fine with Facebook? I'm good with Instagram. All right? We'll check in down the line and see if anything changes. But for now, miss me. So I have a few videos I want to look into. Some serious, some not so serious, and some just, you know, what I would call neutral videos. Neither serious nor non-serious. They just are. kind of like the universe. They just exist. And we're going to take a look at all that. So let's kick it off on a serious note. Let's kick it off where we left off yesterday. Now, I have gone on record on this show, especially in recent weeks, as becoming increasingly more fed up with the likes of Ben Shapiro's obsession with Israel. I have said several times that his show, ever since October 7th, so working on 6 months at this point, working on half a year almost, ever since then, since this whole kind of Palestine-Israel thing kicked off, his show has been about, and I varied with the numbers, but I think I'm going to settle around 67%, a solid two-thirds of his show on a daily basis, on average, is about Israel and what's going on over there. The other one-third of his show, or 33%, is for everything else. So one-third of Ben Shapiro's American conservative political show is dedicated to, you know, American politics and, I mean, got any other thing, really, any other thing in the world. But the other two-thirds is reserved strictly for Israel. And I am now realizing that you could say that while I criticize Ben Shapiro's show for being two-thirds Israel, one may criticize me for the Live from the Studio Daily Edition being about, I would say, 8% criticizing Ben Shapiro. That's a much more solid number, I think. I'm not going to sit here and act like I don't talk about him a decent amount, but I think hey, I don't know what to tell you. He's given me a lot to talk about the past few weeks, and today is no exception. So I want to open up with this video I actually saw on YouTube earlier today, and then I was feeling lazy about finding which exact clip I wanted to find, but luckily the people of Twitter did it for me. And while I was mindlessly doom-scrolling Twitter looking for random stuff to talk about today, a clip of today's show popped up, and it was the exact segment that I wanted to address. So, to provide some context, Ben Shapiro today on today's show, of course, need I say more, was talking about Israel. So in this particular clip, Ben is referring to what I'm assuming we have all heard about if you listened to this show yesterday or if you listened to really any show yesterday. You have obviously heard about what happened over the weekend with Iran bombing Israel. Whether or not it did anything is the other conversation, but they did attempt to bomb Israel, for lack of a better term. And that has spurred a lot of conversations about the escalation of this conflict. And Ben, in this segment, is talking about basically, you know, Joe Biden being a coward, Joe Biden being afraid to, lay the hammer down on Iran and support Israel and trying to, you know, deter and discourage Israel from retaliating and blah, 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 blah. And look, I'm all here for any conversation about how much Joe Biden sucks. You guys know that. I mean, I'm always game for that. But in this particular instance, while I do believe Joe Biden is incompetent and inert, really, is a better word. I don't think he's actually the one pulling the strings in this situation at all. I think he's the figurehead and the administration is making these decisions. But regardless, even a broken clock is right twice a day. And it is my personal opinion that in this specific circumstance, whether the Biden administration arrived to their current position out of fear, out of incompetence, or out of whatever else you have, it is more in alignment with how I would go about it than how Ben would go about it if it were up to him. And let me explain. So let me just show you this clip from this segment here. So this is in reference to all that. Check this out.
When the suggestion is that the United States should be deterred by Iran, and that's what's happening right now. Iran is saying, we fired 300 odd missiles, drones at Israel. Most of those got knocked down. Virtually all of them got knocked down. But don't go further or we are going to go further. And Iran is openly saying that right now. Iran is saying if Israel were to counterattack, then they would unleash 1,500 cruise missiles, for example, and ballistic missiles. And the United States is then putting pressure on Israel. The United States is the deterred party. Deterred, being deterred is a sign that you are the weaker party in any conflict. Because, of course, the stronger party typically is not deterred. Typically, again, it is the weaker party who is worried that the cost of action will outweigh the perceived benefit. Typically, if you're on the playground, it is not the bully who is being deterred by the weakling. It's the weakling who's being deterred by the bully. When it comes to foreign policy, the United States has the world's largest and most powerful military presence, spanning the globe in terms of technology far more advanced than anything on the table by a factor of probably 5. And yet it is the United States that is over and over being deterred by significantly smaller powers, which of course is why smaller powers are feeling their oats right now. So the question is why? Why exactly has it become sort of rote, point of course, for other smaller parties to deter the United States? The answer obviously is not insufficiency of American materiel. The answer obviously is not insufficiency of America's military might. America is so far beyond, for example, the Chinese military in terms of advancement, that the idea that China would go to full-scale war with the United States, that'd be the biggest mistake China ever made. And if that's true of China, which has nuclear weapons, think about Iran, which does not have nuclear weapons, and whose ballistic missile system is so bad that half of the rockets it just fired at Israel fell in its own territory or the territory of other countries before they even hit Israeli airspace. So why is America being deterred? And the answer is simple moral cowardice. The United States under Joe Biden has become a morally cowardly force.
Okay, I hear you, dude. I hear you. And look, I don't disagree with everything about that. I do agree that the Biden administration has arrived to this position of kind of, I don't want to say neutrality, but they're kind of between a rock and a hard place. They have to be supportive of Israel politically, diplomatically, and like realist. Like they have to be like actually supportive of Israel on paper, because that's where our alliances are. But then in order to placate and pander to their base, they have to at the same time act like they're like against what Israel's doing and they're pro-Palestine. And so like they kind of can't go one way or the other. They can't be too pro-Israel or they'll lose their base. They can't be too pro-Palestine or they'll lose the election, because in a general election, I don't think Americans are going to be too fond of a candidate who is openly supporting, you know, Hamas and what's going on over there. So he has arrived to this position of immobility, of, you know, just that's out of pure circumstantial. It's purely, it's not, he didn't get to that place because it's what he wants or what he thinks. He got to that place. They got to that place because there's nowhere else to go. However, just to provide some context for what we're listening, what we just listened to. Ben is referring to the missile barrage into Israel on Sunday night a couple days ago. He has mentioned on the show about the, which Israel has not, again, they have not claimed responsibility for this. They haven't necessarily denied it either. And it's pretty obvious that they're responsible for it. The April 1st, April Fool's Day bombing of the Iranian consulate in Syria, in Damascus, the capital, which killed a couple Iranian generals and several senior, political diplomatic Iranian officials. So Iran took that as a, you know, a direct assault, which, I mean, you know, like I said yesterday, you can't necessarily say it's not a direct assault. I mean, if another country, if Iran bombed the U.S. embassy and killed several American generals in some other country, whatever country it was, I mean, I think you'd be hard pressed to argue that that's not a warlike aggression, right? I mean, could you imagine if like three of our generals and four of our, you know, senior diplomats and congresspeople were killed at a U.S. embassy in like, I don't know, Italy or something because Iran bombed it? Like, I mean, that's, it's kind of hard to argue that that's not an aggression by Israel. Now, of course, this aggression by Israel is not unprovoked either, because Iran is funding proxy terrorist groups like Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, whatever, other weird named groups. And the issue here is the chain never stops, you know. Every single act of aggression in this conflict, at any point, the person, the party in question will be able to point to the other side and say, well, they did that first. And then they'll be able to say, well, they did that first. And so it's this ongoing thing forever. And that's why this thing has been going on forever between the Jews and the Muslims, because neither party wants to back down. Neither party can back down in the eyes of their own religion or God. And so the conflict never ends because it's bigger than politics. It's bigger than negotiations. This is a struggle for the, you know, this is beyond a battle of man, really, in the way they look at it. I mean, people need to understand that this isn't like, you know, US and Germany disagreeing about some climate accord. This is a thousands year battle that has transcended all different political systems, everything. Like, this is what it is. And Ben uses a metaphor. So essentially saying like, you know, the United States is being cowardly. Joe Biden's being cowardly by like kind of like trying to talk Israel down from full scale, you know, retaliation for what Iran bombed them. And look, man, he uses the metaphor, of a bully in a schoolyard. And he's like, you know, the deterred party, the party that is deterred from doing something, is a sign of weakness. That's the weaker party. You know, if you're in a schoolyard, it's not the bully who's deterred from doing something by the kid who's being bullied. It's the other way around. The kid who's being bullied is the weaker party. He's being deterred from going around that guy and avoiding him and not pissing him off or whatever it may be, because, you know, the bully is the party in power. And I understand that. And that is often the case. It is often the case that the party that ultimately steps down may be doing so as an act of cowardice or a show of submission. But the other thing to consider here is, so both countries, both nations, and I'm not an expert, as I always feel obligated to say, I don't think I need to say it. I think anybody who's watching this can clearly tell I'm not an expert on this, nor do I want to be. You know, I wish we could be sitting here talking about things more relevant to us, and we will. But let's get through this first. Both nations, both peoples, have somewhat of an obligation to save face in this conflict. Neither country can obviously back down. That's clear. It's a power struggle. And neither leader from either nation, neither group of people, neither political party in charge wants to be the group that backs down from the other group. You can't do that. You're conceding defeat. And so when Iran is funding proxy groups like Hamas and, you know, causing issues in Israel. And then Israel goes on a full-scale campaign to uproot Hamas from sections of Israel or Palestine or whatever and get them out of there because they're a threat to their society or whatever. They take that to the next level and bomb an Iranian consulate in another country, killing several Iranian officials. And then Iran, they can't just say, wow, dude, really? You really gonna bomb our consulate in Damascus and kill a bunch of our dudes? Really? That is messed up, bro. We're not gonna do shit about it, but that is, I mean, come on, man, really?
That's not what's gonna happen, obviously. So they have to do something now. They have to. I mean, I'm sorry. It's kind of like, you're at a bar with your girlfriend and some dude's like, let's say he slaps your girl's ass. And he turns to you and says, what are you going to do, that bitch? And you just go, and then all your friends are like, you're just going to fucking take that, dude? You're just going to fucking take that? And you're like, no, you can't take that. Your girl doesn't even want you to take that. Probably. She might say, don't do anything, but come on. But that's the position you find yourself in. And what happens here is, let me put it this way. I'm going to use an analogy here. Okay? When you're in a bar fight, this is the dirty little secret that guys don't want you to know. Is that guys want that fight to be broken up. I'll say it again for the people in the back. Guys want that fight to be broken up. See, most guys don't actually want to fight for various different reasons. I don't want to fight because I don't want to fight. I don't want to go out and drink at a bar and end up in a fight. That's trashy and that's not who I am. And I do everything in my power to avoid that, short of being a coward. But in that situation, what happens is when someone starts chirping, you are now put in a situation where you need to chirp back, or else it looks like they just punked you. It looks like they just bitched you, they scared you. So you have to chirp back. Well, now that you've chirped back, the other guy has to match you, or at least match you, if not up the ante, and usually up the ante. Because you can't just, it doesn't just stay on that same level the whole time, usually. What happens is, as neither person backs down, it's a gradual escalation because neither one wants to be the guy who ultimately backs out of the situation, because then you're going to have the other guy be, that's what I fucking thought, bitch. Yeah, walk away. Walk away. And then you turn back around and you're like, you know what, fuck. So what happens is, eventually, in these cases, it escalates to a physical fight. A fight that neither of those dudes actually wants to be in. And that's the crazy thing about it. There's a couple sociopathic dudes that actually enjoy fighting. But most dudes want to look like they want to fight. And they're bluffing. And then the other dude who also doesn't want to fight, maybe he doesn't want to look like he wants to fight, but he doesn't want to look like he doesn't want to fight. So now he has to put up that front. He has to put up a showing of I'm not backing down. And when neither party backs down, you get in a fight. And both of those guys are hoping that the bouncer, ideally the ideal situation is you fucking Jet Li roundhouse spinning back kick the guy in the face and knock him out in front of every girl in the bar and you're awesome and people carry you out on your shoulders as the greatest fighter of all time, heavyweight champion of the world. That's like every dude's daydream. That's what every dude is imagining when he's shadow boxing after watching like a boxing movie. Like, yeah, that guy says something to me, I'd be like, bah, 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 be on top, be like, yeah, we'll say it again. Like, you know, every dude's going through his mind like all the rad shit he would do in a fight with some imaginary dude. That's the ideal situation. We all get that. But the more realistic ideal situation is that that fight is broken up before you look like you were getting your ass beat. Ideally, by the time the fight is broken up, it looks like you're winning. That's best case scenario. But in any case, you want that fight to be broken up before, like, you get knocked out. Because the only thing, as good as knocking a dude out is, it's not as good as getting knocked out is bad. The risk to reward ratio is off in that one. So you don't want to get knocked out in a bar fight. And so you'd rather just get in the fight real quick, look like you held your own, look like you were ready to rock all night, and then the bouncers break it up, it's over, and then you can walk out of there looking like, yeah, man, lucky they fucking broke it up too, because I was about to fuck crack him, dude. That's a situation. Now, if you remember a long time ago, this was an analogy for the Israeli-Iranian thing now. It's gone beyond Palestine now. And the situation is acknowledging that neither of these countries can back down. So now you have a different situation. And it's not the bully in the schoolyard analogy. That's not the best metaphor for it. A better metaphor for it, and I'll explain why briefly. It is not Israel's job to match or escalate every act of Iran's, because that is also a display of weakness. And I'll explain why. Israel is in a position. In this same segment, they said that 99% of the missiles fired by Iran at Israel were shot out of the sky. That 300-something missile barrage, or however many missiles it was, almost had zero effect on Israel. That in and of itself, in my opinion, could be a statement, could be the statement that Israel can make from this. That, along with continuing to gut out all these proxy terrorist groups from their country, just full scale, get them the hell out of there. That would be the power move that I think is necessary. The weak move is going eye for an eye every time, because it's almost like if a middle schooler starts chirping at you, you're on the beach, and some like bratty 11-year-old kid's gonna, hey loser, you're stupid, hey you're ugly as shit, you fag, and you're like sitting there, you're a 30-something-year-old guy, you're like, what'd you say? And now you get you're now in a full scale like argument with this kid, with this group of kids. Now you're a grown man, and you're in a full scale argument in public with a bunch of little kids. And then maybe one of them like punches you, but it's an 11-year-old kid. And then what, you just beat the crap out of that kid? It's like, no, at a certain point, the expected maneuver as the adult is to go, after the 11-year-old punches you, is to go, hey, you're lucky. You're lucky I don't smack you in your face. All right? Get the hell out of here before I call the cops, you fucking brats. And you be the adult. You de-escalate the situation. And you display that, hey, yeah, you just punched me. You're an 11-year-old. It didn't, oh, that was your best shot. Oh, yeah, nice punch. Nice punch, kid. Little boy. Try again when your balls drop. Something like that. Something that lets them know, hey, you're lucky I don't retaliate. You're lucky I don't match you act for act. Because if I did, that would be the worst decision you ever made. And so when Iran bombs you with 300 bombs, they probably figured none of them were going to get through except for like a couple. They definitely figured that. But they did that so that they could say they did something. And then ultimately, none of the missiles make it through. They're all shot out of the sky by Israel and U.S. and all the allies, Jordan and whatnot. And now Ben Shapiro's on here saying, well, we got to bomb Iran now. Israel's got to bomb Iran, and the United States needs to support that and back us up. And it's like, no, dude. Why doesn't Israel just say, yeah, Iran tried. They totally failed. It was kind of embarrassing. And we're just going to continue doing what we're doing, which is getting these terrorist groups out of our country and, you know, whatever. And look, I don't know. Maybe there's a lot of people out there that disagree with me. But here's the thing. Maybe that isn't the best move for Israel. Maybe if you are an Israeli, and maybe if the country that I was talking about was America, I wouldn't have this exact opinion. Maybe if Iran had bombed Baltimore and failed or whatever, I'd be saying, no, we need to bomb them motherfuckers back. But that's because I'm an American. And I live in Baltimore. And so it serves my interests. Potentially. I'm not saying that would be my opinion. I'm just saying perhaps you could argue that maybe I'd be more inclined to have that opinion if it was closer to home. But it's not. I'm not an Israeli. Ben Shapiro is not an Israeli. But I don't see how it serves American interests to encourage Israel to escalate a full-scale war with Iran, who is, as I mentioned again on yesterday's show, tied up in all kinds of alliances with China and Russia and all these other countries that are rival nations and whatever. You can say what you want about their military might, their economy, whatever. The fact of the matter is the West is divided. We can have a strong military. We can have a bigger economy. But at the end of the day, a lot of these wars are won through morale and propaganda and the public being behind it. See what happened in Vietnam. Vietnam didn't have the economy we had. Sure, we could have. People say we lost Vietnam. It's like, dude, you realize if we wanted to, we could have wiped Vietnam off the face of the planet. This idea that like Vietnam, we couldn't beat Vietnam in a war. It's like, no, we couldn't beat them in the type of war we wanted to fight. That's a different thing. Like Vietnam, the Vietnamese, the Viet Cong, were able to resist the United States because the United States has had a certain way they wanted to win that war with preserving this, keeping that, and doing this and doing that. And we couldn't do that. But the idea that, like, you know, I hope Vietnam doesn't attack us. We can't handle them. It's like, okay, there's a difference. Understand how the world works. I'm saying that now to say, look, it doesn't matter if these smaller countries have less military. At the end of the day, if the American public isn't behind it, this country is divided as it's ever been that I can remember. The whole West is, the Europeans, whatever. The West is not in a position, our allies are not in a position to win a propaganda war against these other countries where their people are far more unified. The Chinese are far more unified, I bet, if they get in a conflict with us than we would be in a conflict against them. There'd be bridges blocked every day in America, kids with bikes driving around, stop the war. I'm sorry, there's a lot of things that go into war. It's not like it's just who's got bigger nuclear bombs. You know? When you win a war, you want to have won something. So you don't want to just blow up a country, destroy everything there, destroy the entire economy, everything that was worth having, all the spoils that were worth reaping. And great, now you won a war and you just have a giant 4 million square mile plot of dirt that you destroyed in the process. So it's not even a question of like who would win the war. The question is, why does it serve American interests to encourage Israel's need to, you know, keep their face up against Iran and punch back, even if it means escalating? It's never going to stop. If Israel bites back, Iran bites back. It keeps going. It continues to go. Other countries get involved, and then boom, we're right where we don't want to be. Now I'm sitting here. My tax dollars are not just going to Ukraine, not just going to this, not just going to that. Now they're going over there, which they already are, but they continue to go over there supporting this war. Our troops are over there fighting and dying for Israel. I'm sorry, no. Israel, you're scared. It's going to make you look like a bit. You feel like the only way to come out of this with your head held high is to bomb Iran. I'm sorry. Don't. I think it's a pretty solid look that they tried to bomb you and they couldn't do shit. It's like somebody punches you in the face and it's such a weak punch that you're just like, that was the best you got. Is there anything more manly than that? That's also another thing I daydream about. I daydream about somebody punching me in the face and me just being like, hit me again. I'll give you another shot. That was horrible. Like, that's like the coolest shit you can do. That's like Superman level shit. That Israel was in a position to be like, nice shot, guys. All right, anyway, we're going to continue fucking uprooting all these. That's the position they're in. But instead, no, they have to do, of course, they have to do exactly what Iran did. That's weakness. Well, I don't want to have to do this, but you guys did it, so I guess we have to do it. No, you don't. Don't let them dictate the terms of the fight. So, I mean, I know that was a rather long segment for a Twitter Tuesday, but you just, if you zoom out and you just approach things from the perspective of, it's not everything is about a question of like, you know, we're using these analogies of bar fights and this and that, whatever. But the reality is, it's bigger than that, because a war is often a lot of people that are saying, yeah, bomb this, bomb that, send troops here, send troops there. And those people aren't the ones involved. They're not the ones doing the fighting. They're not the ones doing the bombing. They're not the ones getting bombed. And so it's not really a situation of like cowardice or non-cowardice. In many ways, it could be equally as cowardly to encourage continued violence, because it's not like you're the guy in the bar fight that could get his ass beat. It's like you're the friend of the guy who's like, you gonna take that, bro? Fight him back. While there's other friends being like, dude, just fucking let it go. You said what you had to say. The point is made. This isn't worth it. Like, that's really the difference. You know, I think that's a better expansion on the metaphor. Because the people that are calling for war and all that stuff, they're not the ones that are going. You know, and this idea that like Iran needs to be shown this, it's like, okay, Iran is more than just the politics. Like, these are people. The Israelis are people, you know? Like, when we talk war, it is amazing how nonchalantly people discuss war, like real war. And maybe it's because we exist in a time period where we haven't really seen it on that scale, where it hasn't really, especially in America, war doesn't really hit us close to home. There hasn't been a war on American soil in centuries. So, you know, wars in the American perspective are just far off, distant things that happen across the side of the world that you hear about and see footage of, you know. When in other people's reality, war is like an everyday thing. It's right in their backyard. And, you know, they understand the significance of it. And so maybe I sound like a coward myself by saying, you know, Israel doesn't need to be escalating things. But I'm sorry. At the end of the day, I don't care about Israel. Sorry, Ben Shapiro. I hate to break it to you, dude. I don't care. All right? I don't fucking care anymore. I never did. We gave you that country after World War II. You guys know that? We created Israel. Not Israel. Israel didn't create Israel. We created Israel after World War II as a homeland for the Jews. And now, 80 years later, not even a full century later, that country that we created and backed is now potentially escalating and getting us involved in a global war? No. No. Be grateful you got the land. Do what you gotta do. Kill all the terrorists. Go right ahead. I support you in that. I support Israel in that. I'm not a, the Hamas is, get him out of there. But we're talking bombing a country two countries away. And then expecting us to back you with money and aid and all these things that, you know, America itself could probably be using right now. Much less, not to mention people, troops potentially, in an all-out total global conflict. No, dude, no. You crossed the line, all right? Do what you gotta do. Finish it off, whatever you gotta do. And leave us out of it. So, I mean, this is one of the rare occasions that I might have to say. The Biden administration discouraging Israel from escalating with Iran. I cannot say I disagree with that. So, you know. Let's just try to be objective on this show. That's what we're doing here. Let's be objective. This isn't a right-wing show. It just happens to be a lot. But not to the point where we're just going to blindly support whatever our side thinks. Let's move on to some other things here. Finally, Jesus Christ. I mean, come on. This is a funny video. I like this. So this is a thing I saw on Twitter today. I don't know what this protest is for. It's definitely not in America though. This is like, I can't tell what language they're speaking. It sounds like French, but this video is too badass to be in France. So it's a real catch 22. I can't quite put my finger on it. But it is some type of stupid protest, probably for climate or whatever. It looks like so. Let's check this out. I love this. I love this. Get out of the road, boy. Move it. And then when you touch them, they fall over. Just how lame. And they're not allowed to move. They just have to sit there. There's the chicks. Stop, stop. The other dude's like, get the hell out of here.
What are you doing? Stop.
Move him out of there. Get him out of here. Got another guy in there. Picking him up. Move it. Look how just lame. Look at these. Oh my God. Look at him. Get him at it. I love this. I love this. I love it. And everyone, including the people that support whatever dumb shit they're protesting for, the people that are stuck in traffic are glad these guys are doing this. They're glad they're doing it. Even though they want to act. They want to act like they're not. They're all going to drive right on home after their move. Look, every single person in the crowd is going to drive right on home, whether they agree with them moving them or not, because they all want them out of the road. And that's how we need to start a hand. Look, that was peaceful. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got hurt. You're sitting in the goddamn road, man. Getting moved out of the road is about the best thing you can expect to happen. Unless you literally expect everyone in the city to sit there in traffic and stare at you as you block traffic. Which I cannot imagine. just like the Golden Gate thing yesterday. No, get him the hell out of there. You want to make a demonstration, you want to do something, do it on your own time. Do it in a way that doesn't ruin everyone else's day and ultimately make them hate you and your cause and associate your cause with annoying people. And once again, all annoying white people. It just goes without saying. All that age, all that type. Can you imagine even just like the... I don't know. It's like, just imagine being that guy who's like, yeah, we're going to sit here. And if somebody touches you, you fall over. And then like, they're going to like, whatever. It's like, what? Everything is like an arts, a concept art show to them. Again, it's like, it's not even about the cause. It's about how they're fighting the cause. It's like this display of like a concept. Like an idea, we're gonna represent metaphorically. Get the hell out of the road, all right? Go put it up at a gallery. Go tweet something. Go run for office. Do something productive. Start a movement on your own goddamn time. Get a permit and have a million people out in the park holding up some, whatever. But this is just preposterous. And thank God for people like this who just say, you know what? You want to sit in the road and protest that? Well, I'm going to protest you sitting in the road by moving you out of the road. I'm not going to beat you up. I'm not going to harm you in any way. But I'm going to move you the hell out of the road. And guess what? Every single person, again, who drove right on through after they were moved out of the road, onto wherever they were going, continuing their day, tacitly said, say less. I love it. Get him the hell out of there. Because if you didn't agree with it, they would have sat there and been like, we're not moving anyway. Because we agree with these people. Nobody agrees with these people. Even the people that agree with these people don't agree with these people. If they're in traffic. So thank God. Thank God. And if that is in France, which it could be, again, I'm finding it very hard to believe. Because that does not seem like a French move here. Sounds more like something, this looks like something that you would expect to see in like the former Soviet bloc. Like this seems like a Croatian, Romanian type of thing. Some Transylvanian shit. But if this is France, hey, you just earned yourself a couple points, my friends. This is a good display on the frogs. Let's check out another video here. So this I came across today. This is something Elon retweeted with one word, unconscionable. That was actually the best Elon impression I've ever done in my life. And it wasn't even good. But it was like, with one word, I could like put all my abilities into those four syllables. And I think if that word was one syllable longer, or if that was a two-word sentence even, I couldn't have done what I just did. But that was not bad, I think. But, the video that he retweeted with that caption is bad. And I'm going gloves off with this. I'm done. Look, the trans issue peaked for, I want to say the trans issue kind of peaked like 6 years ago. I feel like 2018, 2019, like 17, 18, 19, the late 2010s were kind of a peak, like, trans rights era when everybody was just going way crazy with it and like whatever, just was like this whole shit hit the fan because you know, for anybody wondering, it was not like that in the early the late 2000s or the 2010s. Like when we were in high school, it was the SGA, the Straight Gay Alliance. That I was in high school, I graduated in 2010. Okay, so that's not that long ago. We're talking like 14 years ago when I graduated. Even when I was in college for 1 year, I would have been class of 2014. It was trans, the whole like people being like, there were trans people, obviously, but like this whole like universal acceptance of the idea that like everyone, you know, your pronouns and what, you know, you could be this and a boy can be, like, all that stuff is actually very, very new. I feel like it really kicked off in like 2015, honestly, right around the Trump time, when he's first announced his campaign. That was like when everything changed. Back in 2010, I say this all the time, you know, you could say, like, I mean, calling someone gay, calling something gay, calling someone a faggot even was not that big of a deal. And like, I mean, if you ever watched the trailer for the movie The Hangover, which came out in like 2011 or whatever, like, or maybe a little bit earlier, but like around that time, like late 2000s, maybe in the trailer, there's that clip where he goes, paging Dr. Faggot. They, not only was that in the movie, but they thought it was so hilarious and so uncontroversial that they put it in the trailer to advertise for people to come out and see it. This legendary movie, you know, the shirts with the babies on it, you get on the boardwalk, like that movie is a classic comedy. I honestly think it might be a little overrated, but it's a very popular comedy, definitely one of the classic comedies of that era. Highly quoted all the time, culturally relevant, culturally impactful. And like that was like it's kind of like even 21 Jump Street, the jokes they made there, like those, that kind of humor, like that, people weren't thinking like that back then. This whole trans radicalism is very new. Don't be fooled by it. And they had us in the first half. They had us scared to talk about how ridiculous a lot of this shit is. And again, I'm not saying anything wrong with trans people. You know, I will accept your identity to a limit. Just keep it fucking simple. I'm not going to do the whole they, them shit. You want to be a girl? Be a girl. I'll call you a girl. Whatever. I'm not going to get involved with all that. I'm a nice guy. I said that on last week's show too. But this whole thing we're about to watch with transitioning kids and putting them on puberty blockers and things like that. No, it's gloves off on that, dude. I'm done even pretending to not notice it. It's child abuse. It's fucking insane. And this is bullshit. So watch this.
Realize that you were a boy.
I just thought I was a boy my whole life.
What are you going to do tomorrow?
Going to the doctors to see if I need hormone blockers.
Max, why is it so important that you get the hormone blockers?
Real quick, when I first watched this, I wanted to make fun of the fact that they're doing this on a swing set because it just seems so corny. Like, I've done some film work and stuff, and I've worked on video shoots and, like, I've, you know, stuff like that. So I've seen behind the curtains on how this stuff is, like, selected, how certain B-roll and locations are selected and, like, what the conversation is beforehand. And it's always some, like, PA, like, dude, what if we got them, like, on the swings? And they'd be like, and the other guy's like, yeah, like, and, like, they're swinging and talking. That'd be, like, real casual. It's like, once you, like, have seen that side of it, a lot of stuff like this just stands out. It's like, I can just picture the conversation beforehand where they decided on the swing set. But then I thought about it again and I was like, it would be kind of weird if they did it like the way you'd normally do an interview, you know, with like a, where it's like two grown adults and they're like sitting there at like a coffee table on like a chair, like kicked back and like talking, like when you watch like a, you know, 60 Minutes or something. And it's like, that'd be weird if you did that with an 8-year-old kid. So it's almost like this is, in a weird way, not as bad. The location, the video you'll see is ridiculous. So far, we are at Max saying he's always felt like a girl. This is a girl, by the way, identifies as a boy at the age of 8. So let's go back to the video here.
Don't go through girls' puberty. I don't want that to happen.
So they're putting him on puberty blockers so he doesn't go through girls' puberty. She doesn't go through
puberty at all.
He knows about puberty, about female puberty. He started to have some breast growth last year, and he actually was using Band-Aids to try to cover himself up. He's 8, you know?
Yeah, that's the point, you crazy
bitch. In
general,
how do you feel about hormone blockers?
I'm nervous about it a little bit just because I always like to know a little bit more about medical intervention, you know, and anytime we're introducing chemicals into bodies that, you know, weren't there naturally, I'm just kind of a little bit worried about it, so that's on my mind.
So let's stop there again. What do you notice, sir? I'll tell you what you notice, what I notice. I'll tell you what I notice, and hopefully what you notice. The mom, crazy, you know, pushy, like says all the buzzwords, make sure to, you know, he's always felt like a girl and I've always felt like a boy. And like, he just started noticing this coming. He's putting band-aids on because he just hates the idea of being like, just pushing all that stuff. Just like this ideological, just cannot wait. Cannot wait to have a child who is in a, you know, whatever, like a marginalized group so that she can have an identity. It's people use the term Munchausen by proxy. These parents, and I'll get to the dad. I'll get to the dad. But this type of parent, the mother, I'm sorry, an 8-year-old doesn't even come to this type of thinking unless she is encouraged by parents who are pushing every day, you know, you don't have to be a girl. Like, if you feel like a boy, this, that, and they like, being trans is beautiful. And like, you're going to tell me that's not going on in that house? In the words of my great grandmother, a lot of these people wouldn't even be thinking of these things that they're doing if somebody didn't tell them first. An 8-year-old doesn't have the thought, I want puberty blockers. I'm not a girl. I am a boy. That's not something that an 8-year-old girl is capable of thinking on any serious level. Note the word serious, okay? But these parents are all into that shit and they push that. It's no coincidence that every time you see an 8-year-old getting puberty blockers or getting some type of weird operation or whatever and identifying as this, that, the third, these are the parents. It's no coincidence. You know, the idea that they're not pushing that on them. It's child abuse is what it is. It's absolutely child abuse. It's borderline. Look, when you're 8 years old, you can't even like be home by yourself. You need a babysitter. You obviously can't vote. You can't drink. You can't smoke cigarettes. You can't get tattoos. But you can decide that you don't want to go through female puberty. You don't even know what that means. And you're allowed to make this life-altering decision that you're being pushed into by your crazy, insane, nuts parents, and doctors who swore an oath to do no harm are facilitating that, and then you wonder why people don't trust them, the pharmaceutical industry or the medical system either? Are you crazy? Do you not see what goes on? This whole thing is nuts. It actually makes me physically angry. Like I said, it's gloves off with this shit. I'm done. I'm done with this. It's almost like child sacrifice in a way. Seriously. It's like these parents are so loyal, so into that ideology that they are willing to offer their own children, sacrifice their own mental and physical health, alter their bodies forever, and push them down that as a signal, as a sign of their own allegiance to that cause. How is that not child sacrifice? It's very weird in that way. But it's hard to argue it's not like that. And then you have guys like this dad who is so clearly uncomfortable with his whole thing. He does not like this one bit, but he's a pussy. He's a cucked, whipped, pushover, weak male who allows his controlling, crazy bitch wife to impose all her psychotic things onto his daughter While he sits back and goes, well, you know, I got to be honest, I'm a little uncomfortable about the idea of doing this. And like, you know, we don't know what the long term is. And he's too scared. He's too weak of a man to say to his wife, hey, listen, bitch. We're not injecting puberty blockers into our 8-year-old daughter. We're not. But no. So this is what you get.
Going to what consultation.
Are hormone blockers? It's a hormone that will block the progression of puberty.
What are the adverse effects of getting hormone blockers when you're, you know, say Max's age?
We have concerns about primarily bone health because the sex steroids, estrogen and testosterone really do help build those bones to be nice and strong. Another one is really kind of the psychosocial development. Our brains are supposed to be, you know, exposed to estrogen and testosterone. You know, if you're not getting your sex steroids, do you still go through that? And how important is that in gender identification? We don't know. Do you want to see what it looks like? See this little thing?
Oh, you don't know. Can you say again? You don't know? First of all, I'm no doctor like this lady apparently is. But I'm pretty sure we do know what puberty does and what it's for. I don't think this is a mystery. And I don't think it's a mystery that when you stop that process that every human being goes through to become a matured adult, whether as a mature adult female or a mature adult male, yes, a myriad of different things happen physically, mentally, emotionally, all apparently according to God, but what does he know? According to nature, but what does nature know? No. Pfizer knows. This bitch knows. Or actually, she doesn't know, but who cares? We don't have to know. Come on in, Max. Let's stop you from going through puberty because you're 8 years old. And you are a girl, but you think you want to be a boy. And you don't want to go through female puberty. You don't even know what that means. You're 8. But come right in. We don't know what the long-term effects is. We don't know. I mean, yeah, it is. You know, you probably should go through puberty. Like, it's good for bone. It's necessary for bone health, for development, psychosocial development, blah, blah, blah. But you know what's more important than all that, Max? It's more important that we don't offend anyone or invalidate someone's existence by suggesting that we shouldn't be injecting every single 8-year-old kid who has a thought with permanently life-changing hormonal chemicals that prevent their development. It's actually more important than all that. And again, people wonder why people don't trust doctors, don't trust the media, don't trust the LGBTQ narrative. It's insane that we are at a point in the conversation that this is even a conversation. This is how far you've been removed from reality. That's the trick. The conversation has been moved so far out into left field that now you're sitting here trying to tread lightly and say, well, you know, I totally support the trans movement and I totally, but like, you know, like sometimes I do sometimes have second thoughts as to whether or not we should be like, you know, doing these permanently life-changing operations and like hormones and blockers on children and blah, blah, blah. And you feel like you have to step lightly. Don't make sure you don't invalidate anyone's existence. You wouldn't want to do that. No, we're done with that. I'm sorry. We need to be done with that. We need to get back to a place where we call obvious bullshit, and this is obvious bullshit. It's that easy, folks. Quit pussyfooting around it. This is pretty cut and dry. Push the window back this way. Push it somewhere back to common sense. As aggressive as people were in pushing it away from common sense, maybe we should Ben Shapiro match their energy and push it back to common sense. Be just as willing to call them insane pieces of shit for doing this to their children as they were willing to call you an insane piece of shit forever questioning that this was wrong in the first place. Do it. I promise you. Because the people that you're fighting against, the people that you're scared of pissing off, that's the bicycle kids blocking the bridge. That's the loser, guys with the vests in the street sitting there and falling over when you tap them and getting dragged out of the street. That's who we're up against. And they got you shook for some reason? No, this is bullshit. Anyway, let's end with something positive. Guys, I've talked about Davis Clark on the show before. Davis Clark, of course, the locked-in guy. I mean, if you don't know, you better ask somebody. You got to know by now. Follow him, Davis Clark, Davis, C-L-A-R-K-E. On Instagram, he's posting inspirational stuff every day. But nothing more inspirational than this video that I saw yesterday. This is after the Boston Marathon. And my man drops this.
Gave it absolutely everything I have for the people. 256, I shit my pants like crazy. I'm going after it.
Hold
all
up,
day,
what?
Every day for the people. 2 hours, 56 minutes, man, people.
Let's, what? Say that again?
Gave it absolutely everything I have for the people. 256, I shit my pants like crazy. I'm going after it all day, every day for the people.
My man said, I gave everything I had. I shit my pants like crazy, and he was not lying. Dude, everyone in the comments, including myself, is like, I don't know how you managed. I don't know how you managed to somehow make shitting your pants cool. But holy literal shit. This guy has officially entered into like a god level of respect from me. This guy is so locked in, so doesn't give a fuck about what you think. He said, I'm going to run the marathon. I'm giving it my best effort. I shit my pants like crazy, but I got it in under whatever hours. Dude, DraftKings is commenting on it. Dude Wipes is commenting on it. Friday Beers, everybody's on. Dude, not a single negative comment in it. This thing has like hundreds of thousands of likes, this video on Instagram. Thousands and thousands of comments. And every single person is like, yo, you are the boy. This is amazing. This is unreal. I don't know if there's any other person on the planet that could post that they just shit themselves and like, I'm jacked up. I'm fucking jacked up. This dude doesn't care. He literally does not give a shit. If shitting your pants is cool, he's Miles Davis. Clark. Dude, I'm sorry. I saw that last night and I was just like, I had to rewatch. I was like, there's no way. There's no way this guy, I mean, this guy just started blowing up. Serious finance guy, like talking about doing spreadsheets, interns, you know, you know, up in Boston Finance District, whatever, like kind of just started popping off a couple months ago. We talked about him. And then he drops this and it's like, dude, I'm sorry, man. If you can be so real and so genuine that posting to the entire world that you just shit yourself can still land you respect and positivity from the people that know you and appreciate you, then I'm sorry, there ain't nothing you can't achieve by keeping it real. And that's the lesson for today on this lovely Tuesday. Folks, thanks for watching. My name is Jimmy Selesky. This is live from the studio, the Daily Edition, but we do have content here every day, Monday through Friday, with yours truly for The Daily Show, and on the weekends with myself and Eric Glazer for Live from the Studio podcast. Make sure you hit us with a subscribe. Make sure you throw us a like, a comment if you got a problem, or if you want a problem. Till next time, folks. Take it easy. Keep it real. Peace.